Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When it comes to like internet trolls and stuff like that, like how do you handle it?
And I just fucked him up so bad, and he ran outside and threw up and never came back. If I put a video out and it's a 1 out of 10 that's killing it, getting a ton of views, I don't give a fuck what you say about me. I'm like, I don't give a shit, man. This video got 200,000 views in 3 days. Sucked my dick. And I don't even know the names of this shit. Like, I'm not saying I made it up because I didn't make it up, but I literally learned it from watching Clay Guida in the UFC.
Oh.
Like, you know how he'll always like hug the legs? Like around the knees? Right. It's not, you know where to find me. Well, guess what? They probably never show up.
One piece of advice to a brand new white belt, what would it be and why?
My advice to a brand new white belt would be...
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Elbows Tight Podcast. Your host, Travis. Today, I have a very special guest, and Finn McKenzie. How are you doing today, man?
Never been better. Best day of my life because I'm here talking to you.
That's probably the best answer I've ever gotten from a guest, so I appreciate that. So, Finn, I mean, I've been a big fan of yours. We'll kind of just jump straight into it. Been a fan of yours. I think the first video I saw of yours was the Ronnie Radke video a couple years ago. And I was like, oh, who is this guy? And being from Vegas, I was like, I love Escape the Fate. And so I watched the video, and I've been, I mean, that was like probably about, what, 3-4 years ago that video came out? And I didn't even know you did jiu-jitsu until Jordan Pressinger was like, oh, yeah, Finn's a purple belt. And
oh,
I was
okay.
Like, holy crap, that's super cool, man. So I would love to hear your story on how you got into jiu-jitsu and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I lied. I've never trained a day in my life. I just just thought it would sound cool. I got into jiu-jitsu way back in the day, back in the 90s, back in like the old school UFC days, like late 90s. A friend of mine, so I watched, you know, the early UFCs like everyone else when they came out, and I thought it was amazing. And then when I moved to college in like 96, a friend of mine was like, oh, yeah, it's this, you know, those guys are doing this Brazilian jiu-jitsu stuff. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. And so he sort of told me about it. I didn't really get a chance to train until a couple years after that. I think the first time I trained was in 99 under a guy named Marcelo Alonso, who I think is like one of the first like Carlson like black belts, I think.
Yeah, we're under him. My school's under Marcelo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, no, you worry, my baby. It's okay. That's what he said when he shows up fucking 45 minutes late. It's okay. No, you worry, my baby. Like, actually, we're 45 minutes late. But anyway, so I didn't train there for very long, but it was enough that I thought it was, you know, it was cool and just life gets in the way and stuff. When I started training more seriously was in Ohio, maybe around 2004 or 5, I think. This was like the peak of like kind of the Rich Franklin, kind of George Gurgel kind of era. And I lived in Cincinnati, which, you know, those guys are close to it and stuff. And so there was like a really big like regional MMA scene back then. And I started doing MMA. And this was back, you know, I mean, it was back in the 2000s and stuff. So I don't even know what like the quality of, I mean, God bless my training partners. They're awesome. You know, one of them ended up fighting in the UFC, actually. But I don't know. It's hard for me to say what our training, like, I felt like it was awesome at the time. And like, I learned a lot, like probably a 2004 blue belt is probably like a 2024, like 3-class white belt. You know what I mean? Cause just people are so much better now. But you know, so I did MMA for a couple years at that place, which was really cool and fun. And I enjoyed it a lot. And then took a lot more time off and then eventually got my purple belt here in Seattle at a place called Kindred Jiu-Jitsu up in Edmonds, Washington, which is awesome. And I loved it. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to train for about a year because we moved and my hands are fucked up and, you know, all that other kind of stuff that happens. But that's the story.
Yeah, I know Kendrick. So they always have a big like name seminars there and whatnot. Yep. There's a pro MMA fighter that goes there, that Duck Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh yeah, Austin. Yeah, he's awesome. Yep. I used to train with him all the time. He's awesome.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
Really, really, really good leg locker. Kind of guy that like when you roll with him, you're like, I'm probably gonna get a bloody lip after this one because he's gonna cross face the living shit out of me. But you know, those are the roles where you learn a lot.
So what was it like taking that break and then coming back to jiu-jitsu in like the early 2000s? Was there like anything in your mind like, I'm just gonna get back into it, or was there like some hesitation?
No, I didn't hesitate at all, because, you know, I mean, especially after doing like MMA and stuff, I got the shit beat out of me so many times. It's like jiu-jitsu is like way less stress than MMA, you know, so there wasn't any hesitation or anything other than just like, well, I haven't trained for a long time, so I'm going to suck even worse, which I did. But, you know, it's like it is what it is. You know, you take some time off, you come back. Just the thing that's just amazing to me is, especially after coming back, I started again maybe around 2018 or 19, I think. And just the level of evolution that happened to jiu-jitsu between like 2007 or whatever it is, and that 10 years after it is crazy.
What was the biggest thing that you noticed that was different?
Well, all the Danaher stuff, basically. You know, and I think Kindred was a little bit early to that because of Austin. I think he, Duck Jitsu, like,
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Like, I think he was one of the first guys in the Northwest to kind of like learn a lot of that stuff. But just there was like Japanese guys that did that stuff, you know, like Imanari and stuff like that back in the 2000s. But like nobody was hitting fucking, you know, all these like, you know, just all those like leg entanglements and stuff. Nobody was hitting that like in live roles, you know, in the, like, we would kind of fuck around. We're like, oh, we saw this in Pride, let's fuck around and do it on each other. But like nobody actually thought it worked, you know.
Why'd you stop training MMA and just go strictly to jiu-jitsu?
I don't want to get punched in the face anymore, you know. I just don't. I mean I'm old, and like the thing with like that regional MMA scene in Ohio back then is like, it's like the reason I never took like a fight there is because the guys there were such just like fucking badasses that you could be fighting somebody, you could both be 0-0, and you could be fighting some like D1 wrestler, you know, that was Rich Franklin's training partner, that is just going to blow your fucking head off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like some Miletich guy or something that'll just rip your spine out of your head, you know? And I just don't like respect, but like, I just don't want that kind of like intensity in my life at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And you were, at the time you were a graphic designer, right? Mm-hmm. Where did you ever feel that jiu-jitsu kind of attracted to you more because of like your creative side of like your personality? You're like, oh man, there's a lot of like learning here. There's a lot of like, I can apply myself and make my own way in this sport.
I'd say it's probably because of my autism.
I don't know if I should laugh at that one or not.
But I mean, but that's really what it is, because, you know, I am autistic, and like, you know, a lot of autistic people are like really systems oriented thinkers. And so jiu-jitsu, obviously it's like never ending puzzle inside a puzzle inside a puzzle inside a puzzle. And so, you know, it engages my brain in a way that, you know, other things like other physical activity doesn't as much. Like, that's what I like about it is, you know, you roll for an hour and a half and like it feels like it was 2 seconds because, you know, you don't even realize how exhausted you are because you're thinking the whole time, as opposed to like if you're running, just like, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored.
No, that's true, because I know when I first started, I would film myself a lot more than I do now. And I would sit there and review it in my head before watching the video. Like, man, I was stuck. I was like in mount for, it felt like the entire round. And then I rewatched the video. I'm like, it was literally maybe 15 seconds. Like, it's like I was completely lost in the moment. Like, this is so, especially right. When you get to that point where it's like someone has like a good neon belly or just has like suffocating pressure. You're just sitting there thinking like, should I just tap to get out of this? Because this is just lasting forever. How do you overcome that?
Those situations where you just feel like you're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, my point of view is like, unless I'm like actually afraid I'm going to get injured. Like, I mean, I'm never going to tap, like, no matter how bad it sucks, like, no matter, like, if it hurts or it's uncomfortable, that's fine. If I'm going to get injured, that's another thing. I'll tap then, obviously. But other than that, it's like, well, I mean, I think about how many times, like in fights or in matches, like, I mean, how it were just rolls, like how many times have you, like, you know, been 95% of the way to getting a rear naked or something like that, and you're squeezing the fucking shit out of him, and you're like, you just can't do it, you know? And if the guy tapped, he would have tapped, but, you know, he just hangs in there long enough and you just give up. Cause you're like, all right, I guess I don't have it. So I just try to be that guy in those situations. And it's like, if I can just learn, you know, how to shift by a quarter of an inch such that the pressure isn't quite there, then that's a win for me. I learned something. You're not going to learn if you just tap to it. You're not going to learn from that.
Yeah. And to your point too, it builds like that mental resilience that a lot of like early jiu-jitsu athletes don't have, right? They'll get in a lot of these positions where they're like, oh my God, this sucks so bad. And they'll just tap, or like a submission will be started and they'll tap to it. And then they're like, oh, you were going to get it anyways. Like, well, that's not the way to think about it. Like, that's not, you gotta try. Most people, especially when you roll with higher belts, they're just going to let you work.
Yeah.
And then if they get a submission, they'll try to let you come out of it. You know what I mean?
Like, heel hooks are the only thing that that's a different deal. Other than that, you know, I'll tap early to those, but anything else, I try to hold out as long as I can.
Have you ever competed in jiu-jitsu?
Just a little bit, and I totally got smoked, which is fine because everyone was like way younger than me and stuff, and, you know, whatever. I expected it.
Yeah, yeah. I competed one time, and it was a big eye opener. Now I can see why people say like you should do it, because it makes you realize like where the holes are in your game a lot more than just on the mat. So during this year break since you moved, have you been looking for academies, or have you been doing like anything jiu-jitsu related outside of actually going to a class?
Yeah. So there's only one place that's like sort of close enough to train, and they don't do no gi, or they have like no gi once a week or something. And I'm not one of these people, like, I think gi and no gi are both cool, whatever. I probably prefer no gi a little bit. But the problem is, like, I broke both of my pinkies, and so my grips are really weak there. And that, like, it just fucks my gi grips. And I also get a lot of, and like, really, I mean, because, you know, with gi, all the gripping is those two fingers. Whereas with no gi, you know, it's here, so I'm good. And I've, like, broken my fingers a little bit, and I just have, my hands just get fucked up from gi grips. And I would like my fingers to work in the future. So unfortunately, if the only choice I have is gi, I just can't do it for the sake of my hands.
Do you like, do you ever do like grip training or anything like that to like try to strengthen it? Or is it just to the point now where it's
like I don't have full mobility. Like I can't extend this pinky.
Oh yeah.
Like they're broken.
What happened?
Just jiu-jitsu. You know,
dude, I feel like fingers are like one of the number one things like people get injured on. Like, one of my best friends, his pinky, same thing, completely just snapped backwards. Yeah. And they're like, one of our buddies with a brown belt just pulled it back into a slot, and same thing. Now he's not like a strong hand pinky. You know what I mean? It's just, this thing is horrible, and it's never been the same ever since. He even had it go rebroken or anything, or rebroken at the hospital, and it was nothing that they could do.
Yeah, I went to the doctor and asked him about it, and he's like, oh, yep, you probably got some permanent deformity there. And I was like, well, all right then.
Is that it?
Yeah.
There's like, okay. You can do. Were those the worst injuries that you've had in jiu-jitsu?
I forget which is the ligament on the inside of your knee. Is that the MCL?
I think so, yeah.
I popped that one once, which sucked. And like, I still, that was like 3 or 4 years ago. And like, I still have a little bit of scar tissue or something from that. And I also popped like the cartilage in a rib or something like that. I don't know exactly what it was. I got it x-rayed, but, I have like a permanent, like weirdo little lump in my rib from that. That fucking sucked.
How does that affect like your, cause you strength and condition train in your garage yeah. quite a bit. Like how has these injuries like affected your day to day life?
Not they don't That's matter cool. for that. The only one that matters is like for jujitsu is like the pinkies, which sucks. Cause, and I know people are like, oh, we'll just use no gi grips in the gi. I'm like, sure. But like that I'm not interested in playing on like hard mode. You know what I mean? Like yeah. if you can only use no gi grips when you're in the gi, like you're going to get fucked up, you know, unless you're fucking like, oh, John Jacques Machado. Okay, cool. I'm not John Jacques Machado. Good for
yeah,
him.
Of course. Let's go to yeah, him.
Yeah.
He's also a core boat, been training since he's like right. 8 years old.
Oh, so just be one of the best of all time. Got it. Okay, cool.
Easier said than done. Yeah. So when it comes to like, you know, you have a big YouTube channel. I mean, your second channel, well, you have three, right? You have your yeah. podcast clips, you have your second channel, your name, and yeah. then Punk Rock NBA. When it comes to like internet trolls and stuff like that, like how do you handle it? Is it like just you're like, whatever, like it doesn't bother you at all being, I mean, you're a little bit older, yeah. you've been doing it for a while. Like has like training ever like kind of like, look, this person wouldn't say it in my face, and if they did, I'd probably mess them up anyway, so it doesn't really bother you? Or like how do you handle trolls on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much that. It's like, what, you know, what are you gonna do? It's like, yeah, it's fucking annoying sometimes, but it's like that's sort of what you sign up for. Mostly I think it's funny. I do wish that you could just fight people face to face, because I'm not gonna say that I would like, I'm not going to say, I'm sure there's someone out there that's a fucking brown belt or something that kicked my ass, but probably not too many of them, you know? And, I wish people could settle things. Like I had, you know who Andre Feely is from UFC?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I had him on my podcast and he was just talking about how you just fight people all the time. Just like, you know, just like, you know, I'm in favor of that. You know, if someone wants to talk shit, then fight.
Yeah.
Or shut
yeah,
the fuck
Tom
up.
Boss always drops his address. He's all like, look, dude, you can right. literally come to my academy. Like, if you talk the shit, like, just right. come on over.
Right. It's not, you know where to find me. Well, guess what? They probably never show up.
That's funny. Did you feel like it was easier to deal with, like, these people's opinions and all this BS on the internet when you were, like, a smaller YouTuber? And now is it easier now that you're a bigger one?
Yeah, it's easier just because, you know, you just get a thicker skin over time. And it's like, I mean, I've heard literally every awful thing you could possibly say about me. I've heard hundreds of times. So it's kind of like, if that's the best you can do, then that's nothing I haven't seen before.
It's so crazy that people in the music space are so opinionated too. Like they're so willing to like have this dogma mentality. And we see it in jujitsu too. Like
for sure.
You and I talked about it on Instagram. Like you'll do a move on Instagram or show something and people are quick to just try to tear you down. I'm like, I don't even know you, bro.
Right. Yeah. Everyone's like, a fucking expert.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, what is like it like when you put a piece of content out there and it doesn't hit your audience the way that you think it should be, or like you're like, oh man, this is a 10 out of 10 or whatever. Oh, like, sucks. What do you do?
Well, I mean, there's a YouTuber named Turkey Tom that tweeted this a couple years ago that I thought was pretty funny. Said it well. 10 out of 10, worse than cancer diagnosis. So for anybody who doesn't know, in the YouTube app, it on the homepage, if you're logged in as someone who owns the channel, it'll rank your last video out of 10. So 1 out of 10 is good. 10 out of 10 is bad. And so you log in and you see that 10 out of 10, and it's just takes the fucking wind out of your sails. That's way worse than any kind of troll or anything like that. Like, if I put a video out and it's a 1 out of 10, that's killing it, getting a ton of views, I don't give a fuck what you say about me. I'm like, I don't give a shit, man. This video got 200,000 views in 3 days. Suck my dick. Say whatever the fuck you want about me.
That's what it's like. I'd rather take a knee on belly than see a 10 out of 10.
Exactly.
Just like double gi grip, like collar grip, drive that yes. knee through my soul.
Right. Knee on sternum.
Just pile driving, man. Yep. I hate seeing that. I'm like, okay, well, that's a sign that this was a piece of garbage. Got it. All right.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about, like, when you go back to jiu-jitsu, maybe making jiu-jitsu content? Like, I was telling my buddy, I didn't even know you did jiu-jitsu because, like, none of your Instagram stuff really ever mentions it. Or, and I've never, all the videos I've seen, you've never really mentioned it either. Have you ever thought about doing a little bit of jiu-jitsu content when you go back to it?
Well, possible, maybe, but maybe not. Number one, I don't want yet another thing for people to argue with me about. It's like, can there just be one part of my life? This is why I don't really ever talk. I never talk in detail about, like, lifting weights or anything for the same reason. Because I know somebody's like, oh, your fucking, you know, toes are turned out too far. You should be no more than 45. You're like, shut the fuck up. Jesus. You know, nitpicking every little fucking thing. So that's number one. Number two is, like, I mean, I'm not good. Like, I'm a purple belt, but I'm one of those purple belts that's like, I'm the rest round. You know what I mean? But because, like, purple is such a weird belt is, you know, you can have someone like me that's like an old hobbyist purple belt that's going to get fucked up by, like, you know, the blue belts, the young blue belts that compete. They'll fuck me up, you know. But then there's also purple belts, you know, that will fuck up, like, a lot of black belts. You know, it's just, once you hit purple, it's like all bets are off. The person could basically be a schmuck like me, or they could be a fucking killer, and you really don't know.
Real quick, this episode is brought to you by our Patreon and YouTube members. Thank you guys so much for committing $5 a month for exclusive and early content, and you get priority Q&A, and you will get secret live streams. And also, you have the opportunity to get your roles reviewed by myself and a past guest or one of my high-level friends that can tell you what you're doing wrong, what your goals are, and where you should be focusing. Also, you are directly supporting the podcast and allowing me to keep improving and keeping my editor, Dan. So thank you guys so much to my patrons and to the YouTube memberships. If you guys want to join for $5 a month, link is down below. Thank you so much. Back to the show.
Peace.
Yeah, that's, I always hear, once you get purple, it's like, you know, jiu-jitsu, like, you're pretty much there for the long haul.
Yeah.
It's like, and so I'm still a blue belt now. I've been a blue belt for about 5 years. And I was talking to Jordan about, you know, putting stuff out there. And I was like, I just feel weird because being a blue belt, even doing a podcast and, like, talking about my experience, I'm like, who wants to listen to a random freaking blue belt? Like, he's like, well, once you get your purple, honestly, people kind of view you differently. Yeah. You know what I mean? After you got your purple belt, well, first of all, what was it like getting your purple belt? What was that experience like? Were you expecting it?
No, I wasn't at all. Kyle, my coach, was like, okay, I gotta say something I should have said a while ago. And I thought he was gonna say something like the gym was closing or something. I was like, oh shit.
Got something better.
Yeah, exactly. Because this was like right after COVID, kind of. And so, you know, that was rough for a lot of gyms and stuff. And so I was like, oh, fuck. But yeah, then he gave it to me. It was awesome. Like, I would say, like, getting my purple belt is one of the coolest accomplishments of my life. Because, I mean, that's no fucking joke. Like, I mean, no. I certainly, like, I'm not good. But, you know, purple belt is, like, you're legit. If you got a purple belt, that's fucking legit. Anyway, like, anybody would respect that. Like, any black belt on the planet will respect that you have a purple belt. You know, that means, you know, you know something. You know, blue belt is cool too, but, like, to me, purple is, like, that's the beginning of, like, really, like, legit, you know? And, so yeah, it means, I mean, especially training with those guys, they're, you know, training with, like, Austin and all those guys, like, that's not an easy room, you know? And I really miss training with those guys. Like, almost all of them competed and competed a lot, you know, like, Austin was, like, on fight pass cards at the Minari and shit. And then, you know, 3 days later, I'm rolling with them, and, like, what an amazing opportunity, you know?
Yeah. What is that like, being in a room of, like, such, like, great athletes and stuff like that, and being a hobbyist, right? Because that's how I am too. I'm just a hobbyist, and I got to roll with Nathan Orchard, and it was just, like, such a different level of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
It was, like, incredible to me to experience someone that's just, like, life is devoted to the art. It's like, what goes through your mind when you're rolling with someone that's just, like, up there?
Survive as long as possible. You know, and for reference, I mean, Austin's like, you know, he's fought, I'd say 125 is kind of like his best weight. And like right now, I probably weigh 185. And, you know, I feel like a helpless fucking baby with him. And then Kyle, the head coach there, he's huge. He's like probably 240 or something like that. And he is he runs like the defensive tactics program for like the King County Sheriffs and stuff, or did at the time.
Cool.
So we're training. The other thing that was cool about that place, so I trained a lot of cops because of that. So he would teach stuff, you know, say at 8 a.m. or something like that, there'd be 40 cops in there, like, you know, for his work stuff. And some of them would train beforehand. And, you know, so I'd come in the morning and get to train with them and stuff like that. So it was cool to train with, like, not only people who were like athletes, you know, high level athletes, but then also people who were like training for like the purest self-defense of like literally just don't get stabbed to death by a crackhead.
Especially over in Seattle.
yeah, exactly. And so I think that's just a really special kind of mix of like the most pure self-defense and, you know, like athletes. It's like, what a cool opportunity. And I'm a really special place. I miss Kindred a lot.
Do you, a lot of people talk about like the mental health side of jiu-jitsu and how it helps so much. Taking this year off, have you noticed a switch in like your mental health or anything like that? Or has lifting really kind of like kept you level headed?
Yeah, it's pretty much replaces it. I mean, nothing's as good as jiu-jitsu, but, you know, I mean, life gets in the way. It's just, it is what it is. People, you know, it happens. But I mean, that's like such a huge benefit of it. I used to have really bad anxiety, which I don't anymore. I would have like horrible anxiety. I would go train for an hour and a half or something. And then afterwards, I'd feel like 95% better.
Yeah, my son, I have a 15-year-old son, and he hasn't trained in like a year or so because he picked up playing football. But back when we would go train together in the evenings, he would be like, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I don't want to go. And I'm like, you always say that. Yep. And then you get there, you start rolling around, you start being active, and like by the time we leave, you're like, that was so much fun. And it really builds like a great bond between me and him doing something very difficult. You recently had a kid. Do you plan on... Mm-hmm. Hopefully getting your kid into martial arts also?
Yeah, wrestling or jiu-jitsu, one or the other, or both. See what he wants, whatever. I don't care. And if he doesn't stick with it, that's okay. But I want him to at least just try it for a while, you know, because, I mean, even if he does one of those things for like 6 months, like that's a level of intensity that most people will never experience in their life. And I just think there's so much to be learned from that, from either one of those, you know, that I think it's just so important for your development as a human. I mean, like the level of intensity of wrestling is like fucking crazy.
Insane.
Yeah. I mean, there was a guy at Kindred, Zach Hernandez, who was like a former D1 wrestler. And I want to say he was only a blue belt at the time or something, but he would just like toy with, you know, black belts. You know what I mean? It's like literally you could tell he's going easy on him.
Yeah.
You know, and like there was a lot of techniques he didn't know in jiu-jitsu, but he was just such a strong athlete and such a great wrestler that it's like, again, at that point you realize a belt really, you know, means something, but there's
when,
a lot
when you talk
it
about,
doesn't mean.
When you talk about like jiu-jitsu in your personal life and like say people don't know or whatever, if it gets brought up, speaking of like just between people, like, has anyone ever been like, oh, I think I could take you, Finn. Like,
I mean, no, because I don't go anywhere other than Target, Costco, and, you know, the coffee shop. So, no. But, I mean, I used to go to a lot of hardcore shows and stuff like that back in the 2000s. When I was, like, training MMA all the time, like, yeah, that shit happened, like, fairly often. And, yeah, I mean, especially the type of people I was around at that time. Yeah, I mean, there were those instances.
Man, I could only imagine in Cleveland, Ohio in the early 2000s what the hardcore scene was like. Because I got into a hardcore scene in Vegas in mid-2000s,
yeah.
Like 2005, 2006. And I was like 130-pound, skinny, scrawny kid, hardcore dancing in skinny jeans,
yeah.
Right? And there would be groups of guys just like crews, you know what I mean?
The guys from Reno were always really gnarly.
Yeah, we had one in Vegas that was the Leathernecks, I think is what they were called. And it was like if their guys were in the pits and you got in, they was like you were getting jumped. And it was like such a horrible experience if they were at a show. And they were at some of my favorite shows. Like I saw Bring Me the Horizon in like 2005 and I was like, oh my God, like these guys are just being absolute tools right now. And now looking back, and I was like, I wish I would have trained something. Well, maybe I could have defended myself.
Cincinnati was like that, except those guys were my friends and training partners. So it wasn't an issue for me.
How do you like now seeing like how the music scene has changed and like over the years, like you talk about a lot, the 20-year rule of things coming back around, and jiu-jitsu's kind of experiencing that now too. Like there was a big shift into leg locks were like the thing for a long time. And now people are kind of steering away from leg locks and kind of going back to like the very simple things.
Yep.
When you look at music or jiu-jitsu or whatever like that, like how do you look at the trends when they're happening? Do you kind of like laugh? You're like, oh, I remember when this was cool back in the day.
I just observe, you know, I don't judge any of these things because trends are going to come and go. And anytime there's a trend, there's some stuff about it that's going to be good and some stuff that's going to be bad. Like, you know, with leg locks, people like playing footsie and like, you know, fucking some blue belt, you know, learning crazy, you know, leg entanglement systems to, you know, fucking backside 50-50 to this, to that, you know, and like, cool, but you can't finish a Kimura, you know. Yeah. On the other hand, that blue belt might catch a black belt, you know, old school black belt. They might catch him in something. So, you know, it's like anything else. There's like good and bad to it. And same with like music trends and stuff. You know, obviously any trend is going to come along and it's going to get oversaturated and ridiculous and played out. But there's going to be some aspects of that. The best artists in that genre are going to stick around. And, you know, like, I mean, I remember when everyone said Bring Me the Horizon was like, you know, whatever, gay scene kid music or whatever. Those are not my words. That's what people said about them. And you remember.
100%.
You know, that's what people said in 2008, you know, and much worse. But then obviously, you know, they stuck around and now they're considered a great band. So I just kind of try to observe it and take what's good and, you know, let go of what's not so good.
One thing we talked about on Instagram was like the use of YouTube for people. Like we were talking about, like most people probably shouldn't watch jiu-jitsu content because it's just going to distract them. How do you view jiu-jitsu content? Do you watch instructionals or other YouTube channels and stuff like that?
I used to a lot, and I would have the same experience every time of like I would see something on YouTube and like, oh, this is fucking cool, and like maybe make my wife let me like try it on her a couple times or something. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is awesome, like I'm gonna fuck everyone up with this next time. And I go and I try it, it doesn't work. You know, I mean, there's probably a couple little things here and there that I picked up or something, but it's like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on what's in the room, you know? And, I would do privates with people. That helped me a lot. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, obviously there's people like Joseph Chen who like, I guess like apparently like learned his whole game from like instructionals. So obviously it works for some people. And I think it's awesome that all that stuff is out there. But I think there's a lot of people that fall into being what I would call technique collectors, you know, just like learning a bunch of random shit rather than sort of focusing on what works. I'll say the thing that I am best at, like my whole jiu-jitsu game, the one thing I'd say I'm pretty fucking good at it, that I can give black belts trouble with, this is guard passing, specifically low passing. And I don't even know the names of this shit. Like, I'm not saying I made it up because I didn't make it up, but I literally learned it from watching Clay Guida in the UFC.
Oh,
like, you know how he'll always like hug the legs, like around the knees. I saw him do that and I was like, oh, I'm going to try that. And it fucking works for me. Like I said, I'll give black belts trouble with that. I'll pass their guard, you know, they always recover usually, but like I can pass a black belt's guard with that shit. And nobody ever taught it to me. I just literally learned it from watching Clay Guida.
What you mentioned that you know, kind of surprise people with that. What is one thing that jiu-jitsu has surprised about yourself? Like you learned about yourself through training martial arts?
Well, geez, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know that it surprised me because I don't know if there's anything that surprised me, but I remember one time I trained for a little while in Newark, New Jersey, which is at that time, it was like 20 years ago, it was like a really fucked up place. Broad Street in Newark? I forget the name of it, the main street through Newark. And I remember like training there, and it was like maybe 9:30 at night or something. It's like a really late class. And I just got fucking worked by everybody there for like an hour. And I was like a white belt at the time. I just got worked by everybody. And afterwards, the teachers kind of, you know, it's like old school, you know, kind of Newark, like Puerto Rican half gangster guy. He was like, you know, you're not that tough, but you like tough mentally. And I was like, okay, I'll take that.
You're like, I think that's a compliment, man.
Like you remember in the UFC when they would list like the strong points of the fighters, right? And sometimes they'd say durable.
The guy could get punched a lot.
Yeah, that means like no defense, but he keeps coming. You know, like Forrest Griffin, durable.
Yeah, yeah. What motivated you to keep training then, even through the hard times? Because I know some people, they can have too many bad classes in a row and just be like, I'm done, man. Like, what's motivated you to keep training?
Autism. I guess that's just how my brain works. I don't have a problem doing difficult, unpleasant things for a long time, you know? I mean, it's part of the process. Although I will say, you know, it is, you have those things in jiu-jitsu sometimes, those periods where like for 6 months, you're just like, I fucking suck.
Oh, terrible.
Nothing works. I get my ass beat in every role. And you just got to keep going because sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. And even if it doesn't feel like you're getting better, you are. And there's going to be someone new that comes along or something like that. And you're going to fuck them up and be like, oh, okay, I guess I was learning something from getting my ass beat all those times. So if you're in one of those kind of low periods, just keep going.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier, you know, even if your kid does like 6 months of wrestling or jiu-jitsu, whatever, I always tell people after 6 months, there's such a hockey spike,
yes,
or a hockey stick of like confidence, skill, you know what I mean? Like, there is such a night and day difference. You'll look back at the person you were walking out the door, like, I would kick the living shit out of that guy.
With ease. I mean, I remember, so like our MMA gym in Cincinnati was, it was in Northside, which at the time, now I think is kind of hipster, but back then it was really shitty. And we would get people just walking in off the street all the time that just like wanted to like spar or something like that. And, you know, it's kind of people where like you kind of just have to, you can't, in that situation, you sort of just have to go with it. And so I remember like, this was a kind of a learning experience for me. Well, so two learning experiences there. First of all, so some just random dude walked in the street, off the street, and wanted to spar. And like, he seemed kind of tough, like the kind of guy that, you know, would like mean mug you at a bus stop and like threaten you and like that sort of dude. And, you know, kind of Eminem type guy. You know, but like, you know, greasier. And so the coach was just like, all right, you can spar with him, because he was about the same size as me, and like put gloves on the guy. And I fucking beat his fucking ass, like without even trying. I was going like 20%, and I just fucked him up so bad. And he ran outside and threw up and never came back. And I was like, I did that. And it wasn't even hard. And then, and I was like, all right, I guess I learned something. And then also at the time I was training with a good friend of mine who I still talk to, who is a real gnarly dude, without airing his business, too much. There's a lot of people that have gotten seriously fucked up in a lot of situations, because of him. And he ended up going to prison for some of these things. Not the guy to fuck with at all.
Right.
And I trained with him. And one time I was just like, let's just do this, go 100%. And he's like smaller than me, but like one of these like brick shit house type guys, like a, yeah, Volkanovski type of build, you know, short, but like real stocky, and
yeah,
had been in God fucking knows how many street fights, like a big scar from where he got his throat cut and stuff. Like, he has trust no bitch tattooed on his neck over the scar where he got his throat cut, you know. Like this is how gnarly this guy is, right? And we just fucking went for it. And like he got the better of it, but I didn't get dropped. I finished the round going 100%, you know? And I was like, okay. Like I was like, I didn't die. Like I was competitive with this guy going 100%. Okay.
Yeah. Dude, those are great, man. Especially when, you know, it's always cool too when it's kind of a compliment and you're like rolling with someone or training with someone and they're like, oh man, I'm going to have to start turning it up on you. Yep. It's like, and you're like, I'll take it.
right. I mean, if you make somebody that tough, really work for it, if they give it everything they've got and you're still standing, like I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I saw something online the other day and I kind of just did a solo episode about it. And it was Brad Lee talking about how he tried jiu-jitsu. He's the big influencer guy.
Yeah.
And he talked about how he tried jiu-jitsu and couldn't get over like the sweaty guys touching him and whatnot. And
wait till you find out about North South, buddy.
Yeah. After a couple of rounds, too.
Yeah.
And he's like, it doesn't matter anyways, because I earned my black belt in Ching Ching Pow.
What the fuck is that?
He's like cocking a gun and shooting someone. Okay. And I was like, oh, Jesus, here we go, man. Like, I'm like, look, if jiu-jitsu is not for you,
okay, go to 7-Eleven, and next time somebody like shoves you in the parking lot and you shoot them, go for it.
That's what I was going to say. like, dude, that how does that resolve every situation? Yeah. Like, in my defense, or in like hindsight 2020, you're like, I don't think if I'm ever using jiu-jitsu in real life,
something went really wrong,
right? And my buddy, who is a former, he did like 25 years as an Army Green Beret, and he kind of, to back up Brad Lee's statement, he said, if I'm using jiu-jitsu in real life, it's because everything else had failed leading up to that point, right? But like, it was like just such like douchery the way he said it. Like, what do you think when you hear people that don't train talk about, oh, bro, I'll just see red? It's like, oh, Jesus, man.
Well, cool, except if someone else sees red and they've trained, then you're going to get fucked up.
Like,
and a lot of people, I would say that, you know, the people who actually train, unless they're total psychos, like really never get in street fights, because we've all had that experience of like, you know, you go to open mat and there's some new guy there that looks like a fucking schlub, you know, picking his nose, and then he just fucking rolls you up, you know?
Yeah. I can't trust anyone anymore. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, that guy that looks like he just got back from the comic book store, you know, and he's half asleep.
Spreadsheets.
Yeah. Just like, tapped me 8 times in one round, like without even trying, you know. And then, you go to 7-Eleven afterwards and like get a Gatorade or something. And you see some guy at the counter, you know, like, well, what about that guy? See, is that the sleeper build? Is that guy like secretly like Muay Thai champ that could like knock my head off? And the answer is maybe so.
Maybe. I tell my son all the time. I'm like. Because he'll talk about like wanting to fight people or whatnot, or at school, he's like, I'll just punch him in the face. I'm like, bro, like it's not worth it. You don't know who people like. Martial arts are so popular nowadays. Yeah. Like you don't know, you know, Jocko talks about, he's like, the first thing I'm going to do in a self-defense situation is run away.
Of course.
He's like, and I tell him that, I'm like, dude, I've been training in jiu-jitsu, you know, 6 years or something like that. Like pretty fit and strong guy. And you are out of your freaking mind if you think I'm going to even give someone the time of day that's trying to confront me in public.
Yeah,
I'm
of like, course.
Like, there's no reason to. Not only that, but how, you could confront the wrong person. They just ching, ching, pow you. You know what I mean?
Sure. I know people that, yeah, I mean, I've been aware of some of those situations.
Yeah, and it's like training jiu-jitsu actually, I don't know. I think it was maybe Henner Gracie talked about like the more like you train this stuff, the more you realize like it's not anything you want to mess with.
Yeah.
Like, and I've never trained MMA, so I can only imagine really like what it's like. I mean, I've been kicked in the face during hardcore shows before, and I was like, that's not yes, fun.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, but I couldn't imagine like the lessons, how quickly you learn the lesson in like MMA training.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you one example of this is like, we were drilling like elbows once with like, you know, very controlled. We put on elbow pads and like headgear and we're like, let's just, you know, gingerly sort of, you know, train some elbows here. And I took one, you know, the dude was maybe going 10% with headgear. And I was just like, I just feel like I got hit in the head with a fucking baseball bat, you know, let alone you see. So then you see these guys in the UFC taking them to the dome, you know, 20 times in a round, and it they don't react. So, you know, you think like, oh, it's no big deal. It's a big fucking deal. Trust me. Or like, you know, people getting low kicked and stuff. Like if you've ever been low kicked, like that shit hurts. Like I have like really sharp shins. So like I've dropped people lots of times just with like one low kick in the gym, not even going that hard. And then you see these guys in the UFC taking 50 of them, you know, trust me, that
still
shit hurts
forward.
Yeah. Trust me. It hurts. They're such fucking psychos that like, they're not going to show it, but trust me, it hurts. So point being is like, yeah, fighting doesn't feel good. It's not as cool as it looks like in the movies. You know, I mean, even jiu-jitsu, you know, how many times you walk out after class with like a bunch of tough rolls and you're just like, I feel like I'm halfway dead. Like every part of my body is fucked up. Like, what am I even doing on this earth?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing too, that even when you go through those hard rolls or hard sparring matches or whatever, it kind of makes you appreciate like the level of like simplicity or how everything else in life is like so much less stressful in some situations. Like you're like, dude, I'm, you know, whatever it is at home, or I have this project that's due or this script to write or whatever. It's like, it's so insignificant compared to like when you're just fighting for your life for an hour on the mat.
Someone's got their fucking sweaty ass rash guard over your face and you can't breathe, you know?
You're like sitting there like, dude, I'm literally having a hard time breathing right now. Like, mother's milk is no joke. Right. You want to talk about something difficult in life, have a chest smother you for a
solid breath. It's one of my – I learned that one from Austin. That is one of my favorite moves. If you've got mount and someone won't turn to give you a side, do the –
mother's milk.
Yep. And then it doesn't matter how tough you are. If you get that smother, they'll turn one way or the other. They'll give you
That's
something.
Funny.
But that Brad Lee guy, you know, having that reaction, it's like, to me, like pulling a gun on someone,
it's crazy.
It makes you a pussy. Like, obviously there's a time, like, I'm not anti-gunner. Like fine. If you're using it for self-defense and that's what you got to do, totally cool. But like, if you're so much of a pussy that you're going to pull a gun on someone cause you can't handle like rolling with a sweaty guy, like, give me a fucking break, man.
Yeah, it shows more insecurity about him as a person than anything else.
You can shove your balls in my face all you want. Like, I'm not... Go for it, buddy.
It doesn't bother me any. I'll take them.
Yeah, like...
You stab me, you know, whatever.
Like, when... if someone's going for, like, a Kimura from, like, side control, you know, you're on your side. They've got your arm here. They're, you know, legs over your face. Balls right... Just teabagging you right here. You know?
Yeah.
How many times you've been there?
Too many times, unfortunately. Right. And it never smells the same. It's like, God damn it.
It's like, oh, that must be Chris.
That's funny. Hey, well, Finn, I know you gotta head out. You're a busy guy. I like to end the show with the same question every single time. If you could give one piece of advice to a brand new white belt, what would it be and why?
My advice to a brand new white belt would be to listen to the coach. Listen to the upper belts. Do not be an asshole. Meaning, if you're like, hey, you know, I keep getting caught with this thing. What am I doing wrong? And they're like, oh, well, the problem is, you know, whatever, your elbows, you know, aren't tight enough. And like, then what you should say is, okay. And then try it. And then listen, do what they say. Listen to what they say and then do it. Don't be like, well, yeah, but as a white belt, if you hear the words, yeah, but coming out of your mouth, that's probably a sign that you should shut up. Right?
Yes.
Like, how many times someone's like, oh, I keep getting caught with this or that. And I'm like, yeah, it's because every single fucking time you do this. Well, I know, but like, all right, well then keep doing it. I don't care.
Yeah. But I saw a Craig Jones instructional. Right. He said,
cool. Are you Craig Jones?
John Danaher said this.
Yeah, if Craig Jones comes in here, he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, it's funny. Hey, well, if people want to find you and come watch your content, if they've never heard of your stuff before, where can they find you at?
If you just look for my name, Finn McKenty, on YouTube, I have two channels. Like you said at the beginning, one is called the Punk Rock NBA. One is just called my name. Either of those are good. Or you can go to finnmckenty.com if you're interested in YouTube coaching. I can help you and your business grow on YouTube. You can check that out at my website. And yeah, anybody, if you have any questions about anything or want to talk about whatever, DMs are open and I read all of them.
Perfect. Well, Finn, thank you so much for your time today, man. This was a great conversation. I'm sure we could have gone much longer, but you're, like I mentioned, you gotta head out.
Unfortunately.
So thank you. Hopefully we can do this again maybe in the future. So.
Absolutely.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for listening and watching at home. Go follow Finn everywhere. He's got super great content. And remember, no oil checks here. Peace.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX, and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.